All right, I think we have reached the appointed time. My name is Dave Bodner, and I'm going to spend the next hour doing part one of a presentation called Unique Electronic Devices You Can Make. I'm a big believer in doing stuff yourself. I do buy very ready-made stuff, but whenever I can, I like to see if I can roll my own. First half of the workshop, the first 45 minutes or so, will focus on microcontrollers, how you can use them, how you can program them, and I think do exciting things on your railroad. Part two will show an array of electronic components, project gadgets and gizmos and tips and tricks that have been developed with and without microcontrollers for model railroad use. Don't you hate people that read PowerPoint? I'll do my best to make them short. Okay, my focus, I'll let you read that. Objectives. I was a teacher, so I got objectives. The second one's the most important. My real objective is to excite you about the possibilities and enable you to get started. Sometimes you just need to have a little bit of demystification of how all this stuff works to get over that initial hump, and you need to know where to get the stuff and, you know, what to plug in where and how it works, and that's my objective, to get that done. Okay. When I talk about a microcontroller, I'll pass some around. These are some microcontrollers that a lot of people euphemistically say that we've let the smoke out of them. There's supposed to be some magic smoke inside of all these devices. If you let the magic smoke out, they don't work anymore. I do that a lot. So I'll pass those around. We're talking about a little chip. The one I'm going to focus on today is about half the size of my little fingernail. It's got 8 pins. You can pull it out of that piece of foam if you pass it around. It's dead. You know? It looks like a little spider. And that little device is a full-blown computer. It has input, it has output, it has memory, it has control. I mean, it's an absolutely phenomenally capable device. It's called, what I'm focusing on, is called a pickaxe. The device was designed in the United Kingdom for use in schools. Now, why is that significant? Because if it's designed for schools, it's designed for kids, and kids don't know what they're doing with this stuff any more than a lot of us don't know what we're doing with this stuff. So if you're an 11-year-old kid in a school in London, or if you're a 60-year-old kid sitting here, what's the difference? Superb support. The manuals are free. The tutorials are free. The software is free. There are forums on the internet where you can ask questions, and the first response isn't, hey, you dummy, did you read the book? There are teachers on there that try to help you. The pickaxe manuals, especially, I'm mentioning section 3 on interfacing, is just terrific when it comes to working with model railroads. There is a book called Programming and Customizing the Pickaxe Microcontroller. There's a picture of it. It is out of date. It's about 2.5, 3 years old. It will be out again in January of 2011. There's another pickaxe book. I think it's one of those Mad Experimenters books from, it's on Amazon, that'll be available in September. All you need to do is go to Amazon and search for pickaxe and you'll get the two books. Neither one of which exists right at the moment, one September and the other one in January. Okay. In my humble opinion, for beginners, the pickaxe is the best choice in terms of capability. You'll be amazed, my prediction, at how capable this little thing is. Ease of use, cost. We're talking about $4 for one of these things. That's why when I let the smoke out, it's not a big deal. When I started doing this, I used something called a basic stamp. The cheapest basic stamp at that time, this was in the mid-90s, was $30. Well, if I smoked one of those things, I was upset. And the second level of the basic stamp was 50. Well, I got a box of those that have been smoked, too. $4, $50. Big difference. Support, and I will give you this. You're going to spend an hour or two with me today. I will give you my email address, and on that handout that I have is my phone number. Give me a call. I will do my best to help you. Now, I'm not going to invent something for you, but if you're having trouble, I'll try to get you past it. There are many railroad-related pickaxe articles on large scale online. And all of those articles are also on my webpage at trainelectronics.com. Okay. Any questions up to that point? Nobody's asleep yet. Pretty good. All right. We're going to develop a circuit and software to make some crossing lights flash. Not a big deal, but let's look at the objectives that we have. You always want to sit, you know, try to figure out what you want it to do before you start so you know when you're done. We want to alternately flash two red LEDs, or green or yellow or whatever, but two LEDs. We want to operate from battery power. We're going to start all this stuff off with battery power because it's really easy to get batteries. You don't have to worry about controlling voltage. You know what's written on the battery, and you're not going to go over or under what you're supposed to be. We're going to alter the timing of the flashing and other characteristics from software. Now, you can do all the things that we're going to do this afternoon using other chips. A 555 timer, for example, will do what this is, and it's actually a little bit cheaper because it's a quarter. But if you want to change the rate at which it toggles the lights, you've got to change the hardware. You've got to change a capacitor or a resistor, rewire it. That's not fun. We're going to do it by changing a line in a program. Then we're going to modify the circuit to start from a push button. Instead of just flashing, it'll only flash when you hit a push button. We're going to do other flashing things, a couple special ones, by making minor changes to the hardware and software. Here's the parts, and I'll pass these around. This is everything that you need in this little box. You're welcome to open it, just don't put stuff on the floor and close it. It's a little circuit board. This is something you can pick up at Radio Shack and a number of other places. There's a pickaxe chip in there. It's another one of my dead buddies. And so I always use a socket. I always use a socket, so if I let the smoke out of this, I just take a screwdriver, pop it out, and put another one in, and I continue. You don't have to use a socket, but it's a good idea. That's the circuit board. We're going to work with three AA batteries. Technically, they're not batteries. They're cells, but I'll use those two words interchangeably. Those are LEDs. And any old LED will work. There are four resistors. Even at Radio Shack, they're five for a buck. So we're not spending a whole lot of money. These two resistors are used for programming. That's what you need to program this chip, is two resistors. That's it. And the other two resistors, we'll talk about this more later on, but LEDs are current-driven devices. If you connect an LED directly up to some, you know, say 3 volts, chances are good it'll eat itself and just go whew, because it'll take all the current that the batteries have to deliver and it'll fry. So you have to have a resistor to keep that down. If you have questions, just, you know, give a yell. Less than $10, you've got a decent junk box, less than that. The software is free from pickaxe.com. Download it, no problem at all. The software is superb. It's a very simple program to work with. It's logical. It's designed for kids, even old ones like us, at least like me. Okay, other items needed. Any Windows-based PC with a serial port. Now, I know we have Mac people here. If you're a Mac person and you want to use a pickaxe, you need to get a hold of an old Windows-based laptop. You can get them on eBay for like $30. You can get them for free if you ask around to your friends, do you have an old laptop in the closet? Oh, yeah, still works, but, you know, you don't need much. Anything, I wouldn't go with Windows 98, but, you know, maybe early XP, that sort of thing. It's ideal if it has a serial port. A serial port is that 9-pin trapezoid-shaped thingy on the back. If you don't have a serial port, if you have a newer laptop, they only have USB ports, you can get a USB to serial adapter. I'll talk more about that in a second. You need a programming cable. The programming cable, here's the programming cable. It's a plug that goes into the serial port and three pins that go into the circuit. That's it. You can make it out of an old mouse cable. And I give a link up here. If you're familiar with allelectronics.com, you can buy that part number for a buck that has the wires and then you still need the plug. I do have to say one thing. If you go to Radio Shack, this little guy on the end here, I think like $4 or $5. If you go to Fry's, you guys have Fry's, I don't. We're going to Fry's tomorrow. You get 10 of these for like $3 in a bag. Okay. Or go to All Electronics, you know, get them cheap. I love Radio Shack when I need something and I'm in a hurry. That's it. Okay. How did it do that? I was touching it. All right. That's the cable. I mean, that's all there is to it. Three wires. This plug right here, by the way, I get from old desktop computers. Never throw anything away. When you take an old desktop computer, you're going to retire it. You take the hard drive out so that your neighbors can't find out your Social Security number. Take all those wires that are in there and cut them off and save them because they have plugs like that on them that let you make it. And I'll pass this around, too. Other items needed. If you can't solder, get that fixed. And I'll talk more about that in the second session. You can do all of this stuff using a prototyping board, something like this, but it doesn't make a permanent thing. It's just for experimenting. Learn how to solder. It's a very valuable skill. So you need a soldering iron, wire cutters. Peter Anderson is a professor of electronics at Morgan State University. I think it's in New Jersey. And his hobby is to promote doing stuff like what I'm talking about. And he sells a solderless development package for the pickaxe for about $20. So, I mean, there are a lot of alternatives. And his website is on my website, too, a link to it. Here's a real important one. You need a 4.5 to 5.5 volt power supply, 3 AA batteries. Again, I'm using batteries. I should be saying cells. How many volts do 3 AA cells give you? 4.5, because an alkaline cell is 1.5 volts. If you use 3 nickel metal hydride or 3 NiCad, you'll get how many volts? 3.6. It'll actually work at 3.6. Sometimes a little touchy on the programming. So if you find it won't program, try raising your voltage up. You know, use 4 nickel metal hydrides or NiCad. Don't use 4 alkalines. How many volts is that? Let the smoke out. Okay. It can operate clear down to 2 volts. So if you have your flashing crossing gizmos going, as long as your batteries still are giving 2 volts, that thing still works. It's amazing. Higher voltage needed for programming. Oh, a basic voltometer is worth its weight in gold. If you don't have a voltometer, you should get that fixed too. And yes, the ones from Harbor Freight for $1.99 are wonderful. It's almost better to buy a new one of those than to replace the battery when it goes. I have about 30 of them, and I dedicate them. A buddy of mine has 6 of them on his control panel for his trains. Each transformer, each power supply, and it, you know, turns them on. Yeah, he's great. The only thing he has to worry about is not turning them off and killing the batteries. Anyhow, if you don't have one, $2, good deal. How many of you have a Harbor Freight nearby? Yeah, they're one. Be careful, but, you know, a lot of their stuff's okay. Now, for USB to serial adapter, here's the first of my discoveries. You can go to Best Buy and you can spend $39.95 for a serial to USB adapter. Or you can go to, how many of you know about Deal Extreme? It's the most fun. It's a Chinese electronics website. And they have more junk than you can imagine. But the prices are phenomenal. This is a USB serial adapter with a little extension cable on it. I'm not kidding. If you have a PayPal account, go to Deal Extreme, look for part number 5859. That's the easiest way to read that URL. Order one of these. You know, charge $3.85 to your PayPal account. And it'll wind up a little envelope. They usually make you sign for it. I can't imagine how they can. I'm serious. My postman thinks I'm nuts. But this is what you get. This works like a charm. It's better than a lot of the ones that you get at Best Buy because it's a true RS-232. All the pins do what they're supposed to do. And some of the Belkins don't work at all. I'll pass that around as well. I have about 10 of those on my wall because every once in a while you screw up there and fry them. Put it in the trash and get another one. Okay. Does that scare anybody? Let's see how many head for the door. That's a schematic. A schematic is just a picture of how you're going to wire something. Now, by now, everybody should have seen the little chip going around. This is a little chip blown up to large size. It has 8 pins. First question, how do I know where pin 1 is? Ready for your first animation? Did you like that? You want to see it again? On one end of the chip is either a notch like that or a little circle. And the circle will either be at the end like that or over pin 1. And if you look at it this way, pin 1 is always the one to the left of the notch. And you count in a circle from there. Pin 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Pin 1 is always connected to plus 5 or plus 4.8 or plus whatever you happen to be giving it, your positive voltage. Pin 8, again on this chip, always goes to, what does GND mean? Which is negative, your minus connection to the battery. So you connect your battery up to here and here. The other pins, pin 2 is used for programming only. This is that serial port. You use pin 2, pin 3, and pin 5 to do the programming. Those are the three wires that are on that thing I'm passing around. There's your programmer, a 22K resistor and a 10K resistor. That's it. And it does matter how you wire them. And pin 7 is also used for programming. You see it going over there. But the other pins can be used to do stuff. They can be used to do what's called input, which means get information into the chip. They can also be used to do output, which means get information out of the chip, and we'll talk more about that in a second. So I have my programming here that connects pin 2 and pin 7 and to ground, so you're going to connect your negative battery to there as well. And I have two LEDs. Whenever you see a symbol for an LED, the bar is negative. That's the cathode, and that goes to ground. So now we have these guys going to the minus connection of the battery, this one going to the minus connection of the battery, and this one going to the minus connection of the battery. And there's your 470-ohm resistor, and that's not critical. If you have a 500-ohm resistor, it doesn't matter. If you have a 1,000-ohm resistor, it doesn't matter. 1,000-ohm, it'll be a little dimmer. If you have a 300-ohm, it'll be a little brighter. It's not a big deal. A 0-ohm. Okay. They're going to connect to two output pins. Now here's one bit of confusion that I'll hopefully get everybody past right now. This is pin 6, but it's called output pin number 1 internally in the PICAX programming language, and that might bother you. Why didn't they use pin 1 as output 1? Well, because it's used to put 5 volts into there. It has nothing to do with it. So just accept the fact that when I talk about output 1, it's actually pin 6, output 2 is pin 5, output 0, everybody knows computer people start counting at 0. Yes? Okay, that's pin 7. And here's input pin 3. By the way, pin 4 can only be used as an input. There's no out on there. This one can be an input or an output. Okay, let me continue. Questions? We're okay. All right. Remember, don't use a 9-volt battery. Trust me, it doesn't work. Try it. Okay. If you don't want to do it with solder, and believe me, when I first build a circuit, I do not solder it. I use one of these things. This, how many of you have worked with these little prototyping boards? Oh, great. I'll pass this one around. This is Radio Shack. I think they're about $15. eBay, they're about $5. They're identical. I buy them by the half dozen or dozen because when I build a circuit and I like it, I leave the prototype there, label it, and put it on a shelf. And that way, if I need to make changes, I can just move a couple wires around. It's kind of neat. But you just plug wires into it. It's beautiful. But this is the schematic. Do you remember? There's the battery. How many cells over here? 4. Am I breaking my own rule?
No.
No. Those are nickel metal hydrides. See, it says 1.2 volts. So that's 4.8 volts. The thing tried to kill me. So the positive, which color is always positive? Red. The positive is going to this rail here, and notice there's a red wire that's going to pin 1. And there's a black wire that's going to the negative battery at pin 8. And you remember I talked about we had a resistor going from pin 5 and a resistor from pin 6? There they are. They go to the LEDs, and you remember that LEDs both had a cathode that went to the minus rail there, the ground? I mean, that is the schematic on that classic plug-in board. This is that programming thing that plugs into the computer. It connects to those three wires there. One of them goes to pin 7. There's those two resistors, the 22K and the 10K, that go to pin 2 and pin 7. I mean, it's not that hard. The first time, the first 10 times, it's hard. But once you start playing around with it, it's pretty easy. It's pretty logical. Okay. That the Radio Shack 276-20, about $15. Or, as I said, eBay. Okay. You can also build them on a little circuit board. And if I can find here, let me pass a couple of these around. I need that one, I need that one. Here. This is the same circuit, and I'll be glad to pass that around. It's got the chip and the LEDs on it, the programming on it. That's how small you can make it. Works just fine. Now, let's talk about the program. That chip doesn't do a thing until you hook it up to the computer and give it instructions. And what we're going to do, here's what we want it to do. Let me show you the picture. A little graphic will help. I'm going to take my little battery. That's what we want it to do. Can you see the two red LEDs? Not too dramatic, is it? I mean, it's not a big deal, but it's like a crossing light. Here's the program. The first line of the program says, hi, 1. Well, it's not saying hello. It's saying, output number 1, make it high. Well, what would that imply? Put voltage on it or not put voltage on it? Put voltage on it, which means light up that output. What does the second line say? Low 2. Go to the output number 2 and make it, well, low would it mean give it voltage or take it away. Take it away. So you notice that you never have both of them on at the same time. Now here's where it gets a little bit interesting. The word start is kind of an arbitrary placeholder. You can use just about any word you want in there. You can't use high or low. Why? They're commands. You have to use some other word. And there is a list in the book of reserved words that you can't use. So if you get an error that really drives you crazy, check the list of reserved words. Make sure you're not using one. But we turn one of them on, we turn one of them off. We're going to pause for 500. Well, 500 what? Computers are fast. You might think, well, 500 seconds or minutes or hours or days. It's 500 milliseconds. A millisecond is 1/1000th of a second. So we're pausing for 500/1000th of a second, which is half a second. Then what are we going to do? This is a neat command. If I tell somebody to go to the back of the room and toggle the lights, what does that mean? If they're off, turn them on. If they're on, turn them off. Well, what does it do? Take pin 1. If it's high, make it low. If it's low, make it high. You don't have to keep track of which one it is. So we're going to toggle 1, which means 1 is going to become low, 2 is going to become high, and go to start says what? Go to that placeholder here and do it again. Well, how long will it do that? Till the battery's dead, or you disconnect it, or you reprogram it, or you cut the wires. Pretty much a long time. Does that make sense? Is that logical? Is it? I think it's simple. Now, it gets a lot more complex than that, but it's a start. Okay, let's continue. And I have a couple notes. Start is just a label telling the go to where to go. Oh, I put these notes in after presentations. People ask me questions. The program remains in the chip's memory until it's manually erased or overwritten. You don't have to keep power on it to keep the program. As a matter of fact, from year to year, I don't touch these chips, and they still work the next year. Yes?
To initiate the program, are you in Word or?
I'll show you in a moment. Okay. Show you in just a moment. Okay, let's actually do it. What I'm going to do, that's the programming language, if you will. Let me shrink this down. This is the free, let me make sure I'm in the right place here. One more second.
Open. There we go. Okay, does that look familiar? High one, low two, start, pause 500, toggle one, toggle two, start. By the way, anything that's after apostrophe is considered to be a comment, and it's for me. It's not for the computer. The computer ignores it. So you could erase everything after the apostrophes and it would be gone. But to answer your question, you go to pickaxe.com and you download the free Pickaxe programming software and you run it on your PC. And that's it right there. Once you run the software, you take that programming table, you take, would you like to see this in green? I'm tired of red. Green, okay? Half second, does that seem about right? I'm going to take the programming cable, I'm going to plug it in, and I'm going to let this hang. Let's see, can we put the guy's mouse here? Give it to you, do. Probably going to cause some explosion here doing this. Stay. Okay, everybody see it? Nothing up my sleeves. If I hit program, it's programming, and it's still blinking. Now, it's doing the exact same thing because it's the same program that I had in it when I came here. But let's just say for fun, we wanted it to flash faster. We want to put somebody into an epileptic seizure. What would I change? One line. To pause, I would make it larger or smaller. And I also discovered that I can't mouse if I'm looking at that. I have to look at this. You want to make it 100. Is that enough? That's pretty small, isn't it? Let's hit program. And you'll notice when I hit program, this thing stops flashing because what's happened is the computer has taken over and said, hold up, get a new program. Here it goes. Is it stopped? Oh, memory failed. Let me try again. Sometimes if you program right as it's starting a sequence, it gets confused. There it goes. Faster? Is that a big deal to change something like that? No. With a 555, you'd have to change a capacitor or a resistor or put a pot on it and adjust it to make it change. How would we make it go more slowly? Change the pause to, let's make it 1,000. Hit program. Did we get its attention? We sure did. Now it's... Do you see the beauty of modifying something by software instead of by hardware? That's a lot easier, isn't it? No solder burns, no little pieces of wire stuck under my skin. Okay. The other thing that's cool, I have used 14 of 256 bytes of memory. So what is that, 5%? I can do a lot with that little bitty chip size of my fingernail. Yes, question.
Go back just a little bit. What's the range of time?
Oh, how many? 64,000, 2 to 16. 62, I forget what it is. 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, 128, 256, 5, 12, 10, 24. Yeah, it's 60-something, I forget. But it's a lot. And you know what you can do? You can say pause 60,000, pause 60,000, pause 60,000. You know, there's another way to do it where you use something called a for next loop that we'll get into a minute and you can have it pause for a week. It is not, I'm glad you brought this up, it is not going to be exceedingly accurate. You would not want to use this to run your heart-lung machine. Because it'll drift a little bit. But it's pretty good. For our purposes, for trains, you know, it's great. It is not a true clock. It's pretty darn accurate, but it's not, you know, you wouldn't want to bet the farm on it. Question.
Since I got here late, what chip are we talking about?
It's a Pickaxe, which is an 8-pin microcontroller. There's one right there. Okay, let us continue. We're going to go back to the... Now, we're going to modify the software. We're going to change it so it flashes for 10 seconds, stops for 10 seconds, and then flashes for 10 seconds. You with me? Over and over again. Not a major modification, but some. Keep in mind, these are all comments. So they're for people, not for the computer. Start, that's a label. It just eventually, you know, we're going to go back up there. High one, low two. Make one on, one off. Now, this is the for next loop I was talking about for a minute ago. A for next loop, when I first started teaching this stuff to children, they thought it was a for next loop. One word for next. This is a for pause next loop. It's a way to count from one number to another. Like if I want to do something 10 times or 20 times or 50 times, I say for a variable equals 1 to 50. Do it 50 times. Okay. So we're saying I want to count from 1 to 20. Well, when you count from 1 to 20 and you tell that to a 3-year-old, they can do it because they got 10 fingers and 10 toes. But you have to have a place to store the number that you've currently been counting. Does that make sense? I mean, we're smart enough to keep it in our head. But a little kid, we need a variable. A variable is a place in the computer's memory to store it. And the variable we're using is called B0. It's called B for byte. A byte is a chunk of computer memory. And remember, computer people always start counting 0. So the first one is not 1, it's 0. So we're going to store the number 1, then 2, then 3, then 4 in a place called B0. Okay? I admit that this gets a little bit complicated, but we'll figure it out. It's not that hard. What we're saying is, I want you to count from 1 to 20 and store the current number you're counting in B0. What are we going to do? Pause for half a second, toggle 1, toggle 2, then go back and get the next B0. Well, the first time through, B0 is a 1. The second time through, it's a 2. The 20th time, it's a 20. The 21st time, what happens? It says there isn't 1. So it falls to here. What does this do? Turns off both LEDs. Pause. What's 10,000? 10 seconds, and do it again. Let's try that. Here's the software. I think I already have this one loaded. It's a normal Windows program. I can have, you know, 50 things going at once. Okay, there we go. Same program. Excuse me. Is our guy blinking? It's about to stop. Okay. Is it still blinking?
Yeah.
If anybody's counting, it will blink 20 times. Ah! All of you that are counting, 1, 2, 3. It'll be about 10 seconds, trust me, and it'll come back. But I'm about to show you the coolest thing here in a minute. 10, we'll just let it go. Hard to do? No. Software complicated? A little more. You know what? You've already got the program. It's on my presentation. You cut and paste it into the thing, and you can do it at home. I don't write half of this stuff. I appropriate it. We'll talk more about that later. We're up to 25 bytes. We're up to 10% of the little chip's memory. Okay, let's continue. Now we're going to show something really cool. This I absolutely love. They added this about 2 years ago. Program simulation is built in. If you have a Windows laptop with you and you have internet access, which you do in this room, by the way, I don't know why, because they usually charge $300 for that. You can download the program today and you can do this stuff because simulation. Let me show you. This is so cool. Let me go back to the program. Watch this. You see where it says simulate? Watch what happens. I'm going to get rid of some extra stuff. You don't need that. Do you see the pins toggling? It's showing you that's high, that's low, that's high, that's low. Now, what's it doing? Now, let me show you one more thing that's really neat. Here's the variables. What's in B0?
21.
Why? Remember, I told you if it goes above 20, it says, oh, too many, fall through. Now, watch what happens. What is it now? 8, 9. Isn't that the coolest thing in the world for teaching? What do I wish I had this when I was teaching? We don't have to build this stuff. It's running up there on the screen doing exactly what I described and exactly what this little hickey's doing. That's built into the software. What's the price of the software? Zero. This was funded, by the way, by the energy industries in Great Britain, oil, gas, electric. Why? They want smart kids coming up so they can hire them. Gee whiz. Okay. Questions? Stop simulating. Cool. All right, let's go back. Program simulation is built in. We did. Oh, I got to get rid of this. The simulator takes over. It puts stuff on top and won't let it go away. There we go. Where was I? Okay, here. All right. Now we're going to do a hardware change because you can't do everything with software. What I want to do now is change it so you push a button and it'll flash, say, 10 times or 100 times or whatever number you want. You ready for another animation? That's the hardware change. We're going to add a button. This is a symbol for a button. Is the button on or off right now?
On.
And if you push it in, it's going to short those two things and it's on. Now, I have to explain how buttons work with microcontrollers. This is an input pin. It's N3. Right now, if I push this button, let's remove this part of the stuff. It would connect it to ground, wouldn't it?
Yep.
So you could have the pin, you could say to the pin, if that gets connected to ground, go ahead and do something. But when you let go of the pin would do what's called floating. And it would maybe stay at ground, it would maybe, you know, change, but it wouldn't do what you want it to do. If you have a floating pin, that's bad. So what you do is you take a 10K resistor, which is a rather large value, and you tie it to 5 volts. So when you push this in, it immediately goes to 0, but when you let it go, it immediately goes back to 5. Now, why is the resistor necessary? Can anyone spell short circuit?
Yes.
If you didn't have the resistor, if you push that in, you'd be connecting positive and negative, otherwise known as a short circuit. So you have to have a current limiting resistor in there to keep that from happening. But that's called pulling a pin high. See why? Pulls it high. When you push the button, it pulls it low. So we're going to use that idea, that hardware change. There's the software. Let's start at the top again. Comments. Start. Low 1, low 2. What does that mean?
Both off.
If pin 3 equals 5 volts, it's either 0 or 1. 0 is 0 volts. 1 is 5 volts. Yes or true or false, let's say that. It's not. You're not saying, does it have 5 volts? Does it have positive voltage? You know, a switch will either have a 0 or a 1 to show if it's on or off. So if pin 3 equals 1, in other words, if it's being pulled high, then start. What's it going to do? Stay up there. But if you push the button, what does pin 3 become? 0. It falls to here, and you know what that does. How many times will it flash? 10 seconds worth, right? Well, no, 5 seconds worth. 10 times, but half second each. Let's do it, because that'll be fun. Let's go back to the software, and I think I have this one loaded too. Maybe not. Let's see. Maybe that is it. Let's go back to true. Hold on a second. No, that's not it. Sorry about this. There it is. That's the program. Let's try it. Shift. And, oh, you know what? I don't have the little, oh, yes, I do. That one has a button on it. You going to give me a hard time again? When the thing is dead asleep, like that 10-second dead asleep, sometimes you have to program it twice because the first time wakes it up. It's not paying much attention. Okay. Oh. Try one more time. You know why it's doing that? Because there's 100 people sitting in front of me. Oh, come on now. Don't embarrass me in front of the people. Okay. There's a trick. I'm going to show you a trick. Start the programming. If it doesn't take it, immediately pull the power and put it right back in again. It'll usually cure it. Except today. We're going to give it one more try and then I'll switch boards. Okay, you're being hard to live with tonight. Okay. Also, invariably, when I'm working with these, I'll break a wire. And I won't notice that there's a broken wire. Let's try this one. Okay. I don't know the answer, but I'll find out. Ooh, something wrong with my computer. Because it's... Try one more thing. There it goes. Okay, we're up to 27 bytes. Is it blinking? No. Push the button. Is it blinking? Yes. And it should stop shortly. Is it blinking? No. Now, could you use that as it is on your railroad? Take this little push button switch, replace it with a reed switch, put it on the track, put a magnet on your engine. When the engine gets up to a certain point, the crossing starts flashing, and you can, instead of having it flash for 10 seconds, have it flash for a minute, or two, or three, or whatever you're happy with. Very simple change. Okay, let us get back to the software. Questions? We're okay. Yes, sir.
If you leave the button down, will it repeat, stay flashing until you release it?
Look at this. You tell me.
It'll keep flashing.
Could I write the software so that it has to see a non-pushed button before it will accept a pushed button? Yes. And that's something that you learn after a while. If somebody leans on a button, you have to write software that says, don't do anything until they let go of the button, and then look for the button to be pushed again. And that's why you need 256 bytes of memory, you know. Okay. Okay, we did that one. Now, let's make it a little more complex. This time, we're going to do this. If I can find a battery. Where did I put the battery? I'm looking for this one. Nope, this one. This one has two buttons.
Push
button. Yeah. If I push this button, is it blinking? And it'll blink. Until what? Push this button. Did it stop? Now if I push this button, the blinking, if I push this button, what happens?
Nothing.
What's it waiting for? This button. Could you make use of that? Put two reed switches on your train, railroad, one at the beginning, one at the end, start it. That doesn't do anything, right? Stop it, start it, stop it. You'll also notice I'm using 12-volt Lionel red light bulbs. Can't do that. I cheated. We'll talk about that in a couple minutes. But you can. This is also 12 volts that I'm powering it with. So I'm giving you some anticipation here. How's he going to make that work? Okay. Yes. Believe me. That's been known to happen. Okay. Add a second sensor and the light goes on when it passes one sensor and goes off when it hits the other. There's the software. I am not going to spend a lot of time on this one. This gets a little more complicated because you have to use a couple of variables if you look up here, B1 and B2, because they have to store which button did you hit first. And it has to remember, if you hit button 1, then don't look for button 1 anymore, look for button 2. And if you hit button 2 first, you have to, yeah. So it's a little more complex, but again, there it is, it's yours. Fly with it, yes.
You want to use a photo sensor.
No problem. Yeah, you can use a photo transistor. This thing will interface unbelievably well with a photo transistor, a simple photo transistor. I'm not going to deal with that too much in this presentation. Drop me an email, I can give you a part number. Yeah. I'll show you something, because I do have something that uses photocells, but that's special. That's next hour. Okay. All right. That's the software. Let us continue. Any other questions? Okay. So, yes.
How far does the magnet have to be from a green switch before it works?
It's a function of the Gauss unit, you know, the power of the magnet.
Stronger the magnet?
Stronger the magnet, the further away it can be. I mean, there can be situations where the magnet can be a couple of inches away. But generally, quarter to a half inch max. I'll talk more about magnets. I am going to talk in the second session about a company called KJ Magnetics. I got a bulletin from them this week. There was a 2 or 3 page dissertation on that. If you go to their website, it'll be there, and it's really very well written, and it shows demonstrations, it's got videos, and it's cool. So, wasn't that a great question to ask just today? Okay. This is one of my favorites. Let me get our little guy back, and I'm going to hope that everything's working okay. If I pick up the wrong battery, there will be smoke, because these batteries range from 3.7 volts clear up to 11.1. Okay. Green, right? Yeah, you're going to like this. Oh, wait a minute. Let's do it here, because this one's already connected. And this one was proven to be A-OK, right? You going to stay there? Nah. See, that's something to do for the next presentation, is develop a board that hangs off a podium that I don't know if I'm going to have, so that I don't have to fiddle with this. Okay. That's a good idea. All right, let me go back to my programming. Let me go to open. Okay. I'll be the volunteer from the audience. Anybody?
Flashing lights for
Morse code.
Ah! What's it saying?
SOS.
Same for loco.
No hands?
SOS.
Pittsburgh.
E-E-E.
Pittsburgh. I have a tower. I have a ham shack on my layout in the backyard, and there's a 3-foot brass tower with a light on top of it that flashes out my ham radio call in Pittsburgh. Runs 24 hours a day, drives my neighbors nuts. That software, this is coming out of that same chip. There's the program. Now, I do have to tell you, I did not write that software. I found that. I went to Google, and I typed in pickaxe Morse code. And I wound up on a website of a guy by the name of Stan Swan in New Zealand. Well, New Zealand's part of, sort of, UK. He's a teacher. He had written it. He's a ham. I said, Stan, could I have your software and use it in presentations and stuff? He said, sure, Dave. And he and I have been corresponding for years. I didn't write it. I modified it a little bit. And I made a circuit that's solar powered. You know, but you don't have to know how to write all the stuff. You just have to have a feel for what it does. It's easy to edit his software to change it. So it says Pittsburgh, it might say Seattle, you know. Unless you want it to say Pittsburgh, I guess that's okay. All right. And by the way, what are we up to? 100. We haven't used half of the software. Half. Isn't that remarkable? Question? Yes?
The reserve word symbol.
Reserve words are...
I just wondered what symbol, what the reserve word symbol did.
Oh, up here. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Good question. I didn't mean to get into this, but I will be more than happy to answer it. You remember I told you B0 we were using once as a counter? I get real unhappy trying to remember what B0 is being used for. So what symbol means is use the actual English word character in place of B0. So instead of saying for B0 equals 1 to 20, if I had put that symbol at the top, I could say for character equals 1 to 20. And it'll remind me what it actually means. It's just a way of saying, we're going to use this word in place of this variable so that it makes sense to human beings instead of computers. Yeah, very good question. Yeah. I really don't need to go through this software because it's way too complex to explain to someone that hasn't really done much work with it. That's not to say you couldn't do it, but not today. There's the program. Okay. Any questions up to there? How are we doing on time?
Ooh, gee.
Is it really? Holy crap. Okay, we're going to do a lighthouse beacon. I've been talking too much. Here's what we want to do. We want to gradually brighten the bulb or LED to near full brightness, momentarily flash to full brightness, gradually dim it until off, delay for a set time, repeat. Like, you know, lighthouse. Okay? We want to use LEDs or incandescent bulbs. We want this to be bright. And it's not just going to be turning it on and turning it off, because what does a lighthouse do to your eye? Well, what does it look like to your eye, though? Brighter, 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 one of those deals. We can't spin the thing, so we're going to make it look like it spins. That's what it's going to look like. Okay. Parts, it adds one resistor and one transistor so that we can fire up a halogen bulb or, you know, 110-volt bulb if we use a different device. Most significant changes to the software. We're going to put a transistor on the end of one of those pins. Each one of the pins on the pickaxe can only handle 50 milliamps. That's not much. An incandescent bulb can draw an amp. That's 1,000 milliamps. But a transistor, this is just an NPN3904, big deal. I mean, it'll draw like 100 mils, maybe 200. And if we want to go further, we can use something called a Darlington. This thing will do like 5 amps. And that's all you need to do. One resistor off of that pin to a transistor, and there's your bulb. That's the additional circuitry. There's nothing to it. But something about this should be bothering you. How does a pin that's normally either on or off provide variable voltage? Because if I'm going to do this and this, that's not ones and zeros. We're going to use something called pulse width modulation, which is what all of the power supplies and DCC and all that stuff uses. The way it works is it takes that pin that's either, this represents off, and that represents on, and it turns it on and off real fast. Well, if it turns it on and off, and it only leaves it on for a tenth of the time, and off for 9/10 of the time, on for a tenth, that's going to look like 10% of whatever the voltage is. If it's on half the time, off half the time, it's going to look like about half the voltage. And here it's going to look like about 90% of the voltage. That's what PWM does. And 10%, 50%, 90%. There's the software. Again, I'm not going to speak to this in detail other than to say the pickaxe has it built in. And if I take a battery, this one, and yes, this one actually is a battery. It is not a cell. There's 5 LEDs doing a little dance. Pretty bright. I'll add another LED. Let it do it again because it's fun. Now, you notice some little steps in there, don't you? You can see them because LEDs are discrete like that. Watch what happens when I switch to a halogen bulb. That's pretty good. Because halogen, you see, is a heat-generating light gizmo, so that it doesn't flicker. Look pretty good? Now, the coolest thing, instead of having a bulb there, what if I put a motor there? Here's a motor, little piece of green cable tie so you can see it. Here's a battery. Same basic software. It's brightening, brightening. That's pickaxe. That's the same chip I passed around. And I have a single transistor in there in between. That's how your trains operate when they're on DCC.
Transistor
or
already.
I think this one might be a Darlington. The advantage of the Darlington is less internal resistance, but yeah, it doesn't make much difference. A MOSFET would be better. That little chip can run trains without any problem at all. Questions up to there? Okay, I'm trying to get back on schedule, even though I'm 10 minutes late. Transistor makes it possible to drive very bright bulb, blah, 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 blah. The size of the motor is only limited by the size of the transistor. PWM is used to run light rail transit. I have a transistor at home that weighs 2 pounds. Size of a small paperback book. It's off of a Bombardier light rail transit vehicle. Going further, the pickaxe also has a servo command for animation. We're going to do some of that in the second hour. This allows you to create simple programs to animate stuff. Part two. Boy, I tell you what. I'm going to skip some of this stuff, other than to say we're using the same concept we had here with this. But instead of turning lights on, what it does is kills a section of track. So if you have two trains that are at a crossing, you can have a sensor, and when it picks up a train on the main, it says train on the other part, stop. There's a whole article on my webpage that talks about this. I'm going to skip over that. That's the schematic. La, 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 la. Yeah, okay, well, optical sensors you asked about. I'm not going to dwell on that here. I'm going to look at that in the next section. We'll go much further in part two. Questions? Hey, I did it. It's not 5 yet. Yes?
You had the LEDs in your lighthouse.
Yes.
Are there LEDs that are required as a halogen that you can use?
Yes, we'll get to that in the second half.
Oh.
You're anticipating what I'm going to say. I hate when you do that. Yes?
Can you program a flicker for campfire and those kind of things?
It's hard, but yes, you can. The best thing, if you want campfire, go to Marshall's or one of those places and buy the little votive candles that run on batteries and take the LED out of that, hook it up to a transistor so you can power something brighter and it works like a charm. Somebody's already done the work for you. It's a real pain to program that, but yes, you can. The other thing to do is take an old transistor radio, an AM transistor radio, and tune it to not a channel so it only listens to noise. Take the output of that to a transistor and it'll flicker randomly. Yeah, anybody else? Yes? No, I do not, but it's easy to find out. We could go to Google and ask it. It's a bunch. 50, 100. Okay, you know what? Why don't we take 4 minutes, if anyone needs to use a restroom, and that'll give me a chance to switch programs, and then we'll continue. Just sit there and stare at me. I guess I'll have to continue talking. I don't know. All right.